money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Ball, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Yo, what's going on? You are locked on the Wizards for the Locked On Wizards show here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel, station, whatever you want to call it. This is the Tuesday night edition. We are recording Monday night. I'm here with Dan Meltzer, who's been on the show a bunch of times. He's incredibly knowledgeable about the NBA, and he works for the Milwaukee Bucks, but he's a DC native. So today we'll be talking about how the Wizards can take care of business. I mean, they took care of business at home, but what the necessary steps and adjustments might need to be to finish off this series, who needs to step up, who will have to be shut down on the Raptors, and then what's wrong with the Raptors as a franchise, because it seems like every year they have great expectations going into a year. A lot of the times they kind of outperform the expectations in the regular season, but they just always struggle once it comes into playoff time. So we'll talk about that and maybe which comparison teams there are to what the Raptors have been facing in recent years. And last but not least, the East is wide open. There's a lot of very even series. I guess the Sixers are up 3-1. Everything else is right in the thick of it. So we'll talk about who has the upper hand in the Eastern Conference overall, and where these matchups stand about four or five games through. About four games into it for each of them. So we welcome in our guest, Dan Meltzer. Dan, it's awesome to have you back. How you doing today?
Thank you, sir. It's good to be back. Both Bucks and Wizards picked up the home wins, tied 2-2, so this is going to be a fun week.
Who are you more surprised by tying the series up at 2-2?
It's weird because I was on 2 weeks ago, predicted both the Wizards and the Bucks to win, so I still feel like both teams will win the series. Bucks definitely had me more worried, obviously, as my day-to-day job, but this whole Wizards season, I feel like, has gone the opposite as most of us all expected, so it's just good to see that, win one road game here in the next two, and these teams are going to move on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So what do you feel like has been, a common trend in the past two home games for Wizards that has allowed them to, crawl back into a series and now even it up? Is there anything, any major differences you're noticing between games 1 and 2 versus 3 and 4? Would you just say it's a better defensive effort or Bradley Beal showing up more so?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best backcourt in the NBA playing that way. I know it's something that has been debated for years, who has the best backcourt future, and at times the Wizards have looked good. The Warriors took that mantle. Some people would say Portland, but that just fell flat on its face. The last two games, Beal and Wall have been the two best players, regardless of any Raptors, and they've just taken over Lowry and DeRozan. So I think everyone's pretty confident that the supporting casts are pretty even overall. It's just whoever gets the better output from their two guards is probably going to win each game.
Yeah, and what do you think is going on with Kyle Lowry? Is it just the playoffs illness that he kind of runs into every playoff series, or is he over the hill? It seems like his impact just, he ends up with solid stat lines, but he's just not that impressive. He kind of scores quietly, like a Tim Duncan type. Have you noticed that at all, or do you think he's still, an all-star worthy player who contributes a lot to the Raptors team and basically is their second banana right after DeRozan?
Yeah, I mean, his stat line, just looking at it, it's really solid. I mean, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 8.5 assists, 2 steals, shooting 42% from 3, 90-plus from the free throw line. I guess his field goal attempts aren't that high. I mean, he's shooting about 12 per game, whereas DeRozan is, over 20. I think it's around 22, 23 a game. So maybe it's just more attempts. Looking at the advanced stats, their defense suffers a little bit when Lowry's on the court. I think does get steals, but he's no match for John Wall, whatever the matchup is there. And then he just doesn't use up a lot of possessions. I mean,
yeah.
When Valanciunas is on the court, dominant. He uses up more than Lowry.
Wow.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, what was your prediction? I forgot. What did you say the series would go to at the end?
Wizards in seven. Okay. Yeah. I just think it's a great idea of watching the Raptors lose more home playoff games. Especially after game one, where up until maybe 8 minutes left in the game, the Wizards had a seemingly good grasp on it. Game two, obviously, the first quarter just ended the game. They couldn't get the comeback going. But I think for a majority of the four games, the Wizards have been outplaying the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't shock me if, you know, game five's Wednesday. Wizards take that. I mean, I don't expect them to lose at home, but I think the perfect Toronto storyline would be to lose game seven at home.
Man. Well, oh, I see what you're saying. If the Wizards lost game six or game five, either way. But
I mean, that'd be shocking, I feel like, with an elimination to blow it at home.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to not even see that series go to game seven, but it would be tough to also win four straight. So you were mentioning before we got started that Tomas Satoransky hasn't gotten too many opportunities, but he's someone who definitely could step up if the Wizards want to, you know, close out this series. Are there other players who you feel like are underperforming right now on the Wizards?
Yeah, I mean, I think Satoransky has underperformed in a limited time. It's crazy that the hook was given so quickly, and now Ty Lawson's taking the majority of the backup guard minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just for comparison, Lawson didn't play in game one, has already played 62 minutes. Tomas, 38, so it's already a huge discrepancy. The Wizards' offense in those 38 minutes with Tomas on the court has absolutely died. I mean, for 100 possessions, we're talking about 65 points, and a defense giving up 123 with, like, a net rating of minus 60 almost. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a reason Scott Brooks did it, but I guess we can touch on Ty Lawson. It's impossible to have an expectation for him, seeing that he signed on the last day, didn't play a regular season game, and has been out of the NBA all year.
Yeah, I mean, what's going well for him is the fact that he looks very comfortable out there, and he doesn't really turn the ball over. He just seems like a very capable ball handler. He had, like, a few clutch plays. I know in Game 2, I think he scored, like, 14 points, 8 assists. In Game 3, he had a big, like, 3 at the end of the third quarter right before the buzzer. He didn't do much at all last Sunday night. I think he shot 0-for-4, and he made a couple nice passes on. He had 2 steals, but yeah, he's kind of quieted down after his initial debut. But it's kind of a tough situation because his defense, he's a lot quicker, so he can stay out, you know, with the Raptors guards when maybe Satoransky can't do that if he's guarding Lowry or DeRozan. But then again, he's not going to get as many rebounds, and I don't know. Do you feel like there's a clear advantage in Scott Brooks's mind for why he's giving Lawson the backup point guard minutes?
I think in theory everything you said seems true, but I'm just looking at things. I mean, I've heard John Wall's turning over the ball too much in the playoffs. All right, well, he's turning over the ball slightly more than Ty Lawson on a per possession basis, 13.8 to 13.2%. That's a wash. Defensively, I mean, Ty Lawson per 100 possessions, we're getting outscored by 14 points when he's on the court with a horrid defensive rating. A lot of those minutes are coming with Mike Scott, who does not help on the defensive side either. I just don't see what Ty Lawson brings. I mean, I see it's very similar to, like, Brandon Jennings last year, where it's a name, a guy who could go off in spurts, mm-hmm. but overall, just you put all the minutes together, is not performing well. Do I think Tomas has played to deserve the minutes in the playoffs? No. Do I feel like he's been given the full opportunity? Not necessarily. And I do think there's something for the experience that Ty Lawson brings. I don't have his career playoff stats in front of me, but he's definitely had a couple series under his belt from the Denver days.
Mm-hmm. One other rotational thing that you brought up is that you feel like Jan Mahimny outperforms Marcin Gortat at center. In the past 4 games, I'd have to pull up the game logs for Mahimny, but Gortat took a lot of heat after game 2. He had no points, 0-for-4. Game 1, he had 12. Game 3, he bounced back for like 16 points. And then this past game, he had 12 points, shot well, 6-for-8, 6
Big
rebounds, 2.
Fourth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was off a wall assist, of course.
Yeah.
He had a funny quote. I remember John Wall said on like some Sports Center, like, I can't believe Gortat is talking trash about it being a better team without or like great team, quote unquote, team victory without me. You know, I give him more spoon fed assists than anyone. And then Gortat said last night, you know, Wall is spoon feeding me and I'm getting fat. So that was kind of funny. So Mahimni, do you want to bring up those what was it, offensive and defensive efficiency rates again? Because he's crushing it.
And real quick, just for the people who may not be, you know, most comfortable with the advanced stats or know exactly what they mean. Offensive rating, defensive rating, it just averages out when you're on the court per 100 possessions, which is kind of the equalizer. I think the Bucks, I think the Wizards and the Raptors are both playing a pace right under 100 possessions. So what you can think of as a whole game or 48 minutes worth per 100 possessions. So your offensive rating with your defensive rating, that gets you your net rating. So Mahimni in just 36 minutes, which I'll be the first to say is too small of a sample size to take too much out of. 159, his defensive rating 102, so that's a plus 57.
Wow.
And then Gortat, 114 to 115, he's pretty much a wash, right? Game score, which aggregates for minutes played and basically, you know, evens it out. Gortat, a 7, Mahimni, a 6. Like, to me, they're very even. Brooks is more comfortable and the whole starting lineup is more when Gortat's in there, and I get that. I just don't want to see the minute allocation is 94 to 36 at this point. I think it should be closer, you know, more 70-50 in that range. But it seems like both the Raptors and the Wizards are going to throw out a traditional five for a majority of the minutes. So what I've wanted to see, you know, the Markieff Morris at the five just hasn't come into effect the series yet.
And Mahimni, by the way, his stat lines have been 2 points, 12 points, 6 points, and 4 points in the first four playoff games. 12 points was in game two. He played 11 minutes. Otherwise, sorry, he played 15 minutes over in game two. Rebounding, he had 2 blocks this past game in game four. Hasn't gotten a ton of rebounds. Just, you know, 0, 3, 2, and 3.
Because of the minutes.
Yeah, it's almost like very few minutes.
Gortat rebound rate, okay. Block rate, astronomical. I mean, Gortat doesn't block shots.
No.
It's been the same thing for 5 or 6 years, however long he's been with us. I mean, to see a block percentage rate of, where is that? Oh, he has a 0, so he hasn't even recorded a block in this series yet. With Mahimni, you know, 11.6% of the shots on the floor against him, he's blocking. That's a really high number. So,
do you feel
I'm not entirely sure why they've really done this, but it seems like they're sticking with it 150% with Gortat. It must just be a trust factor. I did find the Mike Scott at the 5 experiment interesting. They tried that earlier on in the series. You're seeing it NBA-wise, like the too. Big men who can't shoot get exposed, but the Raptors, thankfully, have really played Valanciunas or Poeltl the entire series, one of them on the floor at all times.
What was I? Yeah, I think it's kind of tough because Mike Scott, like, he can add a lot more offensively than either one of those guys, but I feel like he just, is his rebounding rate comparable?
No, not at all. I mean, Mike Scott, I mean, his defensive rebounding rate, some missed shots, what percentage he brings down? 10%. Terrible for a big man. Overall rebound rate, just under 8. I mean, John Wall's is higher. Let's just call a spade a spade there.
Maybe, like, Gortat plays more, not just out of, you know, the respect that he's earned, but also because John Wall feels more comfortable kind of feeding him in the post. He's got sure hands. He rolls very smartly. He gets players open with screens. So I feel like for all of his
thousands of minutes together, with NBA action.
Yeah, no doubt. So Wall is absolutely going lights out. He's 8th in scoring in the playoffs, 26.8 points a game. What is he shooting, by the way? I think he's not even like a miserable shooter either, which is good. 44%
from the field.
Yeah, only 25% from 3 though.
3 of 12. I mean, a couple have been open, but most of them have been just Jackhams.
Yeah.
John Wall style. So.
He's 2nd in assist after I told you the answer, but this is a good trivia question for all of the listeners. Who's number 1 in assist? 13.3 a game. It's Rajon Rondo, the one team. You know, he's never going to die. Don't worry. He'll stick around forever and keep doing big things in the playoffs. The Pelicans were the only team to sweep in the first round.
Convincingly.
Yeah, and Wall averages 13, so just, you know, a third of an assist less. He's 2nd. He's 1 in steals. Is he tied for 1st or actually 1? I know he's getting
total or per game?
3 steals per game.
Yeah.
He's probably up there in blocks, too. Where is he?
He's only got 4 blocks, so.
Okay.
He's put up a block a game, but Yeah, he's been every for the most part sets parts of game one and two. It's been great. I mean, when Beal went out last night, I think most Wizard fans probably expected the worst there. And then John Wall more or less put the team on his back. Defensively, was at his most impressive, especially on DeRozan, just harassing him. But he had that big layup, passed it out to Oubre, really good pass that Oubre got fouled on, made a free throw, hit that baseline jumper to ice the game. But John Wall put the team on his back and decided, I'm the best player out here.
Mm-hmm.
What was the direct quote of the dunk?
The biggest thing was his defensive tone that he set. You know, he had numerous stops on DeRozan without sending him to a line. And that was, you know, for a guy who scored 35 points over the course of the game, like, somebody had to step up and shut him down, and it happened to be a guy who's 4 inches taller or shorter than him, so that was good to see for sure. Do you feel like it's sustainable, though? Of course, you expect John Wall to be putting up, you know, numbers at least comparable to this, if not a little bit lower, but then, you know, last game, Beal also scored 31 points. He shot an effective 10 of 19, 5 of 7 from beyond the arc. Do you feel like, you know, close to 30 points each from Wall and Beal, and then 14 assists from Wall last night. Is that what you need to expect at this point, or do other guys need to step up to the table a little bit, a step up to a plate a bit more? I guess, like, Mike Scott just had 4 points. Markieff Morris, 6 points, even though he had some clutch ones.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it two ways. One, how much better John Wall and Bradley Beal are than the other players. So, of course, any possession that ends with them statistically probably has a higher likelihood of working out as long as it's in the flow of the offense. I mean, John Wall's using up a third of the possessions by himself, probably be on another quarter. So between the two of them, you know, 3 out of every 5 possessions is ending with a shot attempt or a turnover from one of them, which is a crazy, crazy high number for two players down. Just to compare, I know everyone wants to put the comparisons between Lowry and DeRozan. They're at a combined 55, so they're even lower. So I just feel like we have two better players than their two best players, and then the rest of the lineups aren't given really the opportunity to change the game. I mean, yeah, someone goes off and you get a 30-point game from CJ Miles, or, you know, Valanciunas puts up 24 and 14. That's going to be a problem. But at the same time, the Wizards got 20 from Markieff Morris and another 20 from Otto Porter in any game, we'd win by 30. So
right. It's
kind of the series as is.
Wizards missed a ton of free throws last game, too. They missed 10 of them, so, you know, it could have been a
I feel like
much...
the whole year they've been pretty, pretty spot there.
No doubt.
With no horrible free throw shooters is the weird thing. Like, they don't have a DeAndre Jordan or someone who's taking 6 to 8 attempts and missing 3 of them. Like, right. Otto Porter, 80-plus percent. Gortat's a solid 70%. Markieff also. I mean, all these guys should be making more free throws, I guess. It's just a matter of...
Just frustrating. Maybe
they're not called free throws for no reason.
So, in your mind, what'll be, like, the biggest sticking points for the Wizards in terms of what they need to do these final three games? Is there, you know, anything in particular that you think will determine the outcome of the series?
Yeah, I mean, overall, it's a very even series. Toronto's turning over the ball more than the Wizards, so keep that up. Keep forcing the turnovers, should lead easy baskets. An area that I was worried about that has at times been a problem is the Raptors are a better rebounding team, especially on the offensive glass. So, limiting second chance points. Defensively, I don't feel like the Wizards have had a lot of holes. John Wall's one-on-one defense against DeRozan was great. And honestly, the Raptors reverted to their old bad pass selves. You know, they talk about the new offense they came with Nick Nurse and shooting more threes and passing the ball and not going into the ISO, dribble the ball for 10 seconds. The entire fourth quarter for the Raptors was like a time machine back to 3 years ago.
Right.
And John Wall won those battles. I mean, does DeRozan hit 2 more shots in Toronto? Maybe, and then we lose the game. But to me right now, it's Wall and Beal, DeRozan, Lowry. Most Wizards fans will agree, I assume, that they'll take Wall and Beal any day.
True. Well, That'll wrap up our discussion of, you know, where the Wizards stand, who's got to step up to the plate a bit more, and kind of what the keys are to victory if they can close out this series. Obviously, the momentum's in their favor. We're going to transition now and talk a little bit about the Toronto Raptors, who have only made the playoffs. This is their 10th time in franchise history. They started in 95-96. And kind of just been, you know, really disappointing when they get to the postseason. Because you look at the past couple of years, 48 wins, 49 wins, 56 wins, 51 wins. This year they had 59 wins, number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And yet, when you look at the, you know, their playoff outcomes, they got upset in the first round in both 2014 and 2015. Then they lost to the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then last year they didn't even make it out of the second round. I can't quite remember who that series was to. I'll have to look that one up.
Oh, that was the Cavs as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then the Wizards were playing the Celtics. Yeah, that makes sense now. And now, you know, they're the number one seed. Of course, the Wizards aren't a standard eight seed. They're, you know, they've been ravaged with injuries and, of course, like, losing to some awful opponents, but not truly as bad as those losses, which should suggest, you would hope. What do you feel like is missing from the Toronto Raptors in terms of they just don't have the toughness and the wherewithal to stand up to opponents in the playoffs when it comes to that time, despite, you know, what was it? Did they have the best record in all of the NBA? Or no, the Rockets did, but they were close
Rockets
behind.
Did, yeah. Yeah, they were second. I mean, it's, you are right. The first thing is, like, this is not a standard 8-1. I mean, I look at what's going on in the West, and Minnesota might win tonight, recording this on Monday night, tied up at 2-2, exact same spot. I think everyone agrees that Houston is a leg up. Toronto, it never really seemed to me that Toronto is, like, on paper, a much better team. The series is proving once and again that in the playoffs, they kind of fold. I mean, they don't play as well as they do in the regular season. Yeah, the competition's tougher and everything, but I think at some point you just got to look at the players and the core's not getting it done. I mean, on a lesser level, but the conversation you've heard is like, well, Portland, you know, does that core of Lillard and McCollum have a chance to win? I mean, the Raptors have gotten farther by making the conference finals, but very similar position. You know, how does that team take the next step and win? And can you win with Lowry and DeRozan being your two best players?
Do you think that the NBA is catered towards a league where, you know, a guard-heavy lineup is what wins it? Because obviously we've seen Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and KD, who isn't necessarily like a big-body post-type player. You know, these are all perimeter guys. And I don't know if it's just the pure amount of talent on their team, because when you look 1 through 12, 1 through 15, you have a lot more guys that can contribute than, you know, just about any other NBA roster in terms of their depth and their youth and the way that they've kind of organically built that team. But a good thing, one important point that was brought up last night when I was doing a podcast with Brendan Smith, he said when you look at, like, the entire Raptors bench, yeah, it's a good bench, but there's no particular player who anybody is scared of. You know, there's no type of, like, Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams type guy who can just come in and drop 30. Of course, they've got, like, C.J. Miles, who can hit some threes. Who else? I guess Pascal Siakam's kind of, like, making a name for himself. But, like, if that's the second guy I say. DeLon Wright. He's been good. You know, he's had some big blocks on John Wall. He's made a few threes. I mean, altogether, it's, you know, if Fred VanVleet is your best bench player, then it's not, you know, it's the aggregate of the entire bench is good. But there's nobody who's, you know, like a, I think the biggest thing is there's not really any finishers on the team. Like, who would you want taking the last shot if you're the Toronto Raptors? Would you want it to be Lowry? Because he's kind of cold-blooded at times. Or also, you know, it's kind of like hit or miss with him. I don't know. I just feel like they're lacking. They have the veteran presence, but it just seems like something is missing in terms of they don't have imposing bench players in my mind.
Who's making the big plays, right? Like, we'll go back for at least the Warriors most recent. Andre Iguodala has been an absolute wild card and spark plug in the playoffs because he can do so many different things. He's running the point now for them with Steph Curry out for a lot of the games. He hits clutch shots. He plays great defense. You know, played great on LeBron. Won an NBA Finals MVP. So someone like that, they don't have anyone who comes close to that. And you're right. You compare their bench to a lot of teams. It's deeper. But in the playoffs, you don't need a very deep bench unless you're injured. Like, rotations are cut already from, like, 10, 11 to 8, 9. And minutes for starters goes up in the playoffs. You know, guys who play 32 go up to 36, 38, and then up from there. So that matters less in the playoffs. I think also that just the overall impact players that they don't have, who can make the big play, I'm banking on the fact that the thought process was Ibaka would be like 2012-13 Ibaka, and, you know, rim protecting, blocking shots, being an athletic freak
right.
who can go and lock down the paint for you. That hasn't really happened in his trial time. I had, like, the miscellaneous players they play at the three. I think OG Anunoby's looked good in the limited minutes. I think he got a little bit banged up last night.
Yeah.
CJ Miles is there to hit a three, but it's not going to do much more. I've actually been pretty impressed by DeLon Wright. Seems like he's a very competent NBA player, but... And I have people flip the argument and say, well, who on the Wizards bench is that good? No one either. I mean,
yeah.
It's not,
don't
it's not
like I'm
advocating that part either, but it just seems that they're not able to take the next step, and then, I don't know if we really touched on it, but it's probably the ultimate factor is just like, LeBron James lurks in the East at all times, and who on the Raptors is going to stop him? I mean, no one in the East has stopped him in 7 years.
I don't
know. Lost twice to him, head to head.
I don't get why DeRozan's such a bad defender. He has all the physical tools. He can just, like, rise up over people and hit fadeaway jumpers. He can dunk on people. He hangs in the rim forever, like, in the air forever. Why has he never put defense into his repertoire, you know? He's become a
good
great
question.
Playmaker this year. He's gotten into shooting threes. It's, I don't know, he's such a scary scorer. Every time he scores, it just looks like such an impossible basket that you're like, oh my god, does this guy have like 30, 40, 50 points already in the game just because he scores so effortlessly? And even the really tough shots, he still finds a way to put those in. So it's just surprising to me that he's not an imposing defender.
Yeah, I mean, his steals, I'm not looking at his career page right now, but his steals rate has never been super high. I don't think he's physically that strong, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
He's very crafty in the way he gets through the lane and gets fouls and whatnot, puts up shots and, like, step backs and has that mid-range game. But I don't think he's got, like, the pure brute strength. So, when, you know, he's trying to keep someone from driving by him. That person lowers their shoulder or gets any angle on him. You know, he's going to get blown by. And then it's almost the same thing. You know, defense is so much what the team does behind you. You're right. Like, I'm looking at how DeRozan's playing these four games. I mean, his defensive rating's terrible. It's 119. His offensive rating's 108. So the Raptors, when DeRozan's been on the court, they're pretty much getting outscored, which is crazy to think. I mean,
going back,
I really comes back to me, like, how is this series tied? I feel like everything I look at would have been clearly better.
The Raptors dominated game two. They were up 76 to like 40 in the, at
the
halftime.
They dominated 15 minutes of it, but the rest of the game was more or less a draw, which is fine. I mean, they didn't need to try for those other minutes because they got like a 25-point lead. And that's on the Wizards for just laying an egg in the first quarter, which they've done a couple times.
Speaking of Serge, by the way, I'm shocked by the fact that he's only 28 years old because I feel like he's been around so much longer. Yeah, it's crazy to me.
I'm not saying, like, actually.
Are you saying he faked his birth certificate?
I'm not saying he faked it. I'm just saying there probably is no actual birth certificate. People say it all the time with Thon Maker. Like, how old is he? And real quick, people might not be watching the Bucks series. Thon Maker, back-to-back five-block games. Read this today. Don't have the evidence right in front of me. But if he had enough minutes, he would have the highest block rate in the NBA postseason history.
Wow. It's too bad that he doesn't qualify.
The Raptors wish they had someone like him who was just going around just swatting down wall shots and making life miserable and hitting threes.
Hey, Ibaka's got, what is this, 7 blocks in 4 games? That's not bad. But his,
I mean,
his point total
bad,
has been disintegrating. He's been well on the boards, 12 rebounds, 9 rebounds, 6 and 10 through 4 games, but his point total is totally just falling off the map. He started the
11-9, almost 2 blocks a game. It's a very solid player, but is that the third best player on a championship team? No.
Nah.
Like, you want to compare it to what the Celtics could have, you know, if Hayward and Kyrie were healthy, or the Sixers do have, or what, you know, I'm not going to put Cleveland that bench because I don't know who their third best player is right now. Even the Wizards, like, who'd you rather have, Otto Porter or Serge Ibaka? Very different players, but I'm going to take Otto.
Yeah.
Pretty much every time.
I want to get to one more topic before we sign off here. So we talked about, you know, what the Wizards need to do to win, what the Raptors haven't been able to do throughout, like, their playoff experiences the past few years. As we look at the Eastern Conference, nobody's really jumping out as the dominant team. It seems, you know, to me, Miami, even though they're a 6 seed and they've won just one game, they seem kind of like, you know, it's just like half a game separating them. They seem more like the 8th seed, or they could be an 8th seed in my mind. And so we've got 3 series tied at 2 apiece. Cavs, Pacers, the Cavaliers won a crazy one last night to even it up. Wizards, Raptors are obviously tied. We talked about the Celtics and Bucks also being tied, and the Sixers up 3-1 on Miami. Who do you think is coming out of the East? Is there anyone who has looked better, you know, by comparison? Is like, who would you take if you were a betting man right now? What's going on with the Eastern Conference playoff picture?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, my rational mind says go with LeBron until he loses. You have no reason to doubt him, right? It's like almost like until the sun doesn't come up tomorrow, just assume that there will be a tomorrow.
And you mentioned Oladipo is kind of cooling off, shooting a little bit too.
Yeah, he hasn't been great this series. And the fact that the Pacers are 2-2, I mean, one game was won by former Wizard Bojan Bogdanović. Clearly just had the game of his life in game three. For everything, it looks like the Cavs Pacers will go seven. Sixers, I expect to close out at home. Embiid's back, going to get his legs under him. He hasn't played in almost a month. I think, you know, they should be able to wrap that up tomorrow night. Bucks-Celtics, to me, seems absolutely destined for a seven-game series. And then Wizards-Raptors as well. So, who comes out of the East right now? I'll say Cleveland.
Over
But if you just ask me who... Over Philadelphia. But if you ask me, like, who just has the best team? Not the best player, obviously. I think it's Philly, just in terms of who can match up against Embiid and Simmons the way they're playing. And their role players have just been out of control good. I mean, Redick, Ilyasova, Bellinelli, Covington's defense is great. I mean, those role players just fit it perfectly and just will play around Simmons and Embiid.
I'm so amazed every time Simmons makes a shot that's not a dunk or, like, an open layup, just because his offense is so unconventional. Like, none of his jumpers really look like they're in rhythm. He had this one, like, driving layup where he kind of, like, turned back to the elbow and faded away and still got that to go somehow. His so I don't know how he does it.
His 10 to 12 foot game is amazing. I mean, yeah, it's like, wow, he doesn't shoot a three. Why does he have to? Like,
yeah, he's got
let's say
floaters.
Ben Simmons one day got to league average 36-37% from three, right? Do you want Ben Simmons wasting possession shooting 5 to 6 threes a game? No, he's way more efficient if he's driving and passing or taking a shot close to him where he shoots way over 50%. I mean, to me, you don't need to be great at everything. I think there's been such a reliance on shooting that you surround him with 3 or 4 shooters, and when Embiid is on the court for 5 of 7-2 man, he can certainly shoot. You put Bellinelli or Redick and Ilyasova and, you know, Covington and Saric, and I mean, it's a deep team. You put all those guys you can shoot around him. How do you defend a team like the Sixers? Because they're going to run a pick and roll. Simmons is bigger than your point guard. It's probably bigger than anyone else you've got on your roster. And the guys. Yeah. You know, a 6'10 point guard is super fast. You want to play under and play off, he just gets like a full head of steam, 2 dribbles, such a good passer that he'll find when you cave the defense. Or do you sag off and let them just enter the post with Embiid and live with whatever post move or post out pass comes from that? I mean, to me, that's the best roster in the East, but
I don't know how many minutes Hassan Whiteside or Justice Winslow are playing, but you would think that with a rim protector, you know, you wouldn't see Embiid getting so many easy, you know, drives for layups, and you wouldn't even see him getting into the rim, you know, into the lane so easily with an elite defender.
They don't play Hassan Whiteside. I mean, they don't play him in the clutch at all. He's so bad offensively. He can't do anything. I mean, I'm going to pull up his stats. For comparison's sake, I mean, they played 4 games. Hassan Whiteside, 67 minutes in 4 games. Other big men on that team, Ben Adebayo, rookie, 61, almost right on there. Kelly Olynyk, 109, way more. That's 40 plus more minutes, almost whole games worth. I mean, Whiteside really averaging 6-6, a little over a block a game, and 60, you know, playing about 16 minutes a game.
Yeah,
that's for someone making $20+ million a year. That's crazy, and it's been all year. I mean, it shouldn't be a shock. I know a lot of Heat games aren't on TV. Kelly Olynyk plays the fourth quarter for them. That's just the way it's been, and it's kind of remarkable that it's fallen so hard on Whiteside. I mean, he had, what, like 2 really, really good years, almost a near-max contract, and now seems like a dying breed of NBA dinosaur, you know?
He's like Serge Ibaka.
He can't guard the perimeter. Well, Ibaka at least can shoot a 3.
And he's a little faster. I mean, I wouldn't say Hassan Whiteside is a poor perimeter defender, but, you know, he's just very limited offensively.
He's not guarding Ben Simmons. You know, he's not guarding Dario Saric to the 3 line, because that removes him from his best skill, which is, you know, shot blocking. The guy's got 5 blocks in 67 minutes. Kelly Olynyk has 5 blocks in 109 minutes. And it comes to offensively. Like, Whiteside does nothing well offensively. Doesn't pass, doesn't have a post game, can't shoot, doesn't shoot free throws well. I mean, there's literally nothing that Hassan Whiteside gives you on offense that makes you better.
So, as we look at, you know, the Eastern Conference right now. By the way, it was hilarious last night in the locker room. Bojan Bogdanovic hit like some and one in crunch time and against the Cavs, and John Wall is just screaming like, "Oh, Bogey and one!" Just so excited hopefully see LeBron lose and have like a way easier path to the Eastern Conference Finals. But so your predictions are that
let's not put the cart before the horse on that.
No,
everyone besides Cavs fans are rooting for LeBron to lose. They just don't want to. He's easy to root against. You root against the top players.
No, because like nobody's gonna watch the finals.
So there's a conspiracy theory where like Adam Silver's on the phone with the refs telling, I don't buy into that whatsoever. I just don't understand how LeBron keeps getting better and better and seemingly puts the team on his back. And I think he'll win four games before the Pacers win four.
Of course.
I mean,
another thing,
it's almost disheartening to see that LeBron has to work this hard just to get out of the first round. Then the question becomes, how does he do this for three rounds?
But playing 82 games, leading the league in minutes played.
40-plus minutes in the playoffs. I mean, he's literally putting the team on his back. And
I just don't think people want to watch an NBA Finals from the Eastern Conference that doesn't feature either the Cavs or Sixers.
I mean, maybe the general fan. I mean, the Celtics have the history where,
that's a good point.
But the Celtics aren't making the Finals. I mean,
and they don't have star power this year either. No,
Do the Wizards stand a chance of making in the finals?
Yeah.
I think there's...
Oh, the finals?
We see the path. The path is the Cavs lose to the Pacers somehow. The Wizards play a Pacers team that we all expect to beat.
Six
and then they play Philly, who's just not experienced enough for whatever reason, and the Wizards use their 4 years of playoff experience and sneak past Philly and go get baptized by the Warriors or Rockets. Like, to me, that at least makes a lot of sense on paper.
The Rockets aren't making it to the finals, by the way.
0% chance? You're going... I would like to know... Like, let's just hear it quickly. Western Conference, I mean...
Okay.
There's a couple game fours tonight, so keep that in mind. But I would say Houston will win the series. Golden State will win.
They're playing game five tonight.
And give me Utah. Yeah.
Do you think Golden State wraps it up
tonight? Rockets got game four. Jazz got game four tonight. Warriors game five tomorrow. So when most people are listening to this podcast, we'll have a better idea.
Yeah.
I think the Jazz will win.
I think Utah wins.
Not be able to get past Houston. And then Golden State will, regardless if Steph Curry's there or not, find a way to beat New Orleans. I just trust, what they have versus what New Orleans has. So then Rockets worse. You're saying the Rockets have 0% chance of winning that?
I mean, it's tough to say 0%, but I would say it's, less than
play the Warriors well.
If it's a 7-game series, they're not going to win more than 2 games.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with the mindset, how do the Warriors lose? I think Steph Curry is the ultimate wild card for these playoffs, because it's not that I necessarily don't think the Warriors can make the finals without Steph. It just becomes so much harder. And very rarely in the history of the NBA has a team been able to win without their best player or second best player, former 2-time MVP. They're out of luxury because they have Durant. Steve Kerr literally said yesterday, don't expect him back anytime soon. I know some people were hoping for the start of the New Orleans series. He might miss that entire round. I mean, they said they're going to reevaluate in a week, which we'll already have probably, unless they go to 7 against the Spurs, they're going to have at least a game in on New Orleans series.
Yeah.
It very realistically might be 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and he's going, maybe New Orleans doesn't have to play, and then they can shock the world. But the step up from Portland to Golden State is going to be massive. And
one of those
as great as Anthony Davis is, Golden State has their version with Durant. So give me the rest of the rosters. I'm going to take Clay and Draymond over Rondo and Mirotic. And maybe I'll be biting my tongue.
I really want to see. I don't think it's going to happen, but I really would love to see Donovan Mitchell and James Harden just going head-to-head into a 7-game series if Utah emerges, and I guess if the Rockets emerge, but they're obviously going to. Cool.
That'll be a fun series. I don't necessarily think if Steph Curry's hurt, I don't think the list is as Golden State's as some people may think it is.
Yeah, I think they are going to wrap up this series with the Spurs tomorrow night, though, or Tuesday night, whenever you guys are listening to this. Cool. Well, Dan, it has been a pleasure. Good to hear from you about, the Wizards' path to victory, the historical flaws with Toronto and how their team just isn't really imposing at this stage, and kind of a little bit similar to the Trailblazers, as you mentioned. And it was good to hear your predictions for the Eastern Conference. So you still think that the Pacers are... Sorry, not the Pacers. The Cavs. Basically the same thing. The Cavs are going to come out of it and win the East. So...
Yeah, I guess to be ahead. On the record, I'll go Sixers close out the series. Cavs win. Wizards win. Bucks win. We can talk again once the series are set in round two. Hopefully, you know, the Wizards have a round two to play for.
Right.
But yeah, if you're going to put me on the record, I'll still stick with the Cavs coming out of the East, but less confident than when we talked about like 10 days ago, so we shall see.
I just realized that 4 out of the 6 Eastern Conference logos have basketballs in their logo. Only the Cavs and the Bucks don't have basketballs within
the
logo.
Do the Bucks have a basketball in their logo?
No,
look harder.
Just some antlers. What?
Look harder at the antlers. What shape do they make?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
Yeah, every team has a basketball on their logo. Like, seriously, it's scary how every team in their primary logo.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the other logo for the Cavaliers has, like, you know, the guy on the horse actually carrying a basketball or something. Or
yeah, I mean, I guess the Cavs truly are one of the ones, but, like, the Bucks, I'm going to say they do have a basketball on their logo. It's negative space. It's that future art design. When you pay the millions of dollars to these people in New York City to come up with.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of their uniforms, but that discussion is for another day. Dan, sure, thanks. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. I've learned better not to talk about any song requests because you don't really, you know, have any.
No, put on that new Ariana Grande track. That's real good. I don't know if you guys heard the new Ariana Grande song, but I'm feeling it right now.
Mm. All right, I'll check that out. By the way, Dan isn't on Twitter, but you can follow Locked On Wizards at Locked On Wizards. You can go to Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel, which is NBN-Radio. Also, I'm Noah_Goetzel, G-O-E-T-Z-E-L. Make sure to follow all of the Locked On Podcast Network and all Locked On NBA podcasts. Also, there's some great playoff coverage going around. I'm part of a blog called Wizards Extra, so be sure to follow them. We post a ton of pregame and postgame videos, lots of good interview videos with players and coaches. After everything wraps up, follow us for live coverage throughout the home games and road games as well. So those are my plugs. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere else where you get your podcasts, you can find us. Thanks, Dan, and tune in tomorrow night for an interview with Becca Winkard, aka at Becca MVP, for your game 5 preview. Thank you, everybody, and have a nice evening.